You're listening to the West End Frame Show. Hello and welcome to the West End Frame Show. Today I'm very excited that we're back in a studio thanks to the amazing people at Wildcard Theatre Company. We're at the rehearsal studios in Bond Street and it's just so nice to be back in person. I'm your host and West End Frame editor Andrew Tomlins, and today I'm joined by an amazing co-host. He is one of the UK's busiest casting directors. Just a couple of his recent credits include The Pirate Queen, Hugh Jackman's World Arena Tour, Beast Type Song, Thriller Live, Starlight Express, Dirty Dancing, One Man, Two Governors, American Idiot, Footloose, Close to You, Five Guys Named Mo, the list goes on and on and on. He was the children's casting director for Kinky Boots, Annie and The Bodyguard, amongst others, and he has been casting director in residence at Above the Stag and at the Barn Theatre. He's done all sorts of other amazing various things in the industry as well. Welcome to the West End Frame Show, Harry Blumenau.
Hello.
How weird is this to actually be seeing
It's really nice. I like it. We're in a nice little studio. We've got cushions and stuff around. It's pretty nice.
Wildcard is lovely, but we are literally in, well, someone just said the dungeons.
Yeah. We are a bit in the dungeon, but there's nowhere I'd rather be.
It must be so weird for you, though, because you normally spend your days in rooms with actors coming in, and it's all about, you know, it's lots of talking, lots of catching up, lots of socialisation. Yeah. And at press nights, we get to chat.
I think, like, I see you pretty much exclusively at press nights, and I always wave at you across the room. I'm like, hi. We'll catch up in the interval. Yeah. But no, what's been really hard, and it has been a real struggle, is I went from doing, I was saying earlier, I'd done a lot of shows last year to very few this year, and I'd gone from meeting 500 people a week because we were doing so many shows in the same time, and to now I'm maybe seeing 3 or 4 people every 3 months, and it's terrifying, like, because I'm pretty sure I've lost how to be, like, socially acceptable in public. I walk out in my pajamas and I'm like, this is still okay, isn't it? And I turn up to auditions, I haven't done my hair, I'm like, hey. But no, it's so nice to be back. And in London as well.
I know. Well, I went to one of the first shows I've been to, well, since his most recent lockdown. I went to see Jodie Jacobs on Friday at the Hippodrome.
I was meant to go, but I couldn't go in the end. That's sad. I would have seen you there and today. Oh.
And she's incredible, but it also, I saw all the staging people were there. I saw so many people, and it was the first time in ages that I've been, oh, hi, how are you? And then you have to remember to kind of do that whole introducing thing to the person you're with, and, you know, that thing that you normally do daily at press nights. You do that all the time, and I'd just forgotten what that felt like, and I'm the kind of person who quite likes that.
Yeah. I'm not the, like, biggest hugger in the world, and I always find physical contact a bit weird, because I'm like, I've come from the tube, we've got grubby hands and stuff. So the first 3 months, when we were still, like, going, are we going to go into a lockdown, is Theatreland going to shut, I was okay, because I was just doing what I normally do. Now I'm like, I want to hug everyone I see, and I can't. I'm just doing the elbow bump. Which is sad. No one wants to bump elbows.
No, it is sad.
But necessary.
I remember one of my favourite press nights, maybe it was even this year, was Rags at the Park Theatre. And because we were sat next to each other.
It was like school children at the back of the bus. Like,
it was a really serious show.
Yeah, I know. And it was a great show as well. I just sort of remember seeing you and I was like, oh, hey, would you... should we catch up in the interval? Yeah.
And you were like, you look like that person. And you were doing all sorts of really...
You did look like him as well. It was good. It was like your long-lost brother.
But that was nice because, well, I'm happy that we're here today, because apart from at Rags, we hardly ever get to have a proper conversation.
Yeah.
So some people listening probably kind of vaguely might know what you do. But I want to know, what is your, as a casting director, what is your day-to-day? Because I know you spend lots of time in audition rooms and you spend lots of time... seeing people and hearing people sing, but there's a lot more to it than sitting in a room.
There's an awful lot of admin. you know, and it's a lot of emailing, lots of filing of paper in the old days. Now it's just lots of filing of documents on Dropbox or something. But there is an awful lot of that, and we work all hours of the day to make sure that we can keep up and go to these hundreds of auditions a week. That's what I do. What are my day-to-day is I wake up, I do a bit of exercise, I get on the bike, come back, I do a load of emails, I'll book people in for their auditions, and there's a just before all this happened, there was quite a large team of us doing it, and with Debbie, who I also work with, we spend all of our time just choosing people and like making decisions with the directors and the producers preferences in mind of who they want, and we then give our own flavour, I suppose, of casting. So that's kind of my day-to-day.
I imagine a lot of it is kind of, you've got different directors and different producers, and you have to know what different people are like. So there's a lot of kind of trying to understand the different vibes.
A lot of the pre-pro with what we do is getting to know the teams well enough to be able to go and make decisions for them. And, you know, especially like prelim auditions are more becoming more popular, and the more we work with American teams, the more we have to do first rounds and prelims just to make sure that there aren't 5,000 people for them to see when they've flown over from Florida, sure, or New York. You know, that would have been the more obvious choice. I work a lot with Carnival Studios, who have Carnival Cruise Lines as well, and they fly over for 48 hours, and I've had to see 700 people in that 2-day slot. So that's a lot of what we do, is getting to know their tastes. And because we work with a lot of recurring teams with us, we tend to know who they would tend to go for. But then we get to bring in, you know, like our wildcard. Oh, we're in Wildcard Studios. Our wildcard choices, who more often than not get really far or if not get the job, you know, which is wonderfully rewarding, you know, especially if it's a new grad or someone. We get to go, oh, this person, we've just found them, I saw them in another show and I just wanted to bring them in, and they come in, you know, and they like them.
Yeah, well, I guess one thing that I love doing, I've always loved doing West End Frame, is kind of trying to discover those people who just doing their first job. So I'm like, right, I want to interview you because I know you're incredible and you're going to be massive. A really good example is someone like Evie Rose Lane. You know, I'd been hearing about her, and I went to her concert, and as soon as she got Footloose, I was like, right, we need to do something. And you would cast her Footloose.
I met Evie. I went in to do audition days at her college, and I met her there, and we gave her the lead in the musical. I'm saying this like I'm this sure. I'll check it before this goes out, because otherwise I've got this really wrong. But I met her at her college, and we put her in the lead role, and she was a star. I mean, just truly sensational. I was like, well, I'm always going to keep track of where she's at and what she's doing. And she's worked for me a couple of times now. And when she came in for Footloose, she came in and we just went, well, this is her role, isn't it? There's no one else that can do this. And then after we'd done that, I went to see her at Zadel when she did her night there.
I saw you there.
Of course, because couldn't miss Evie singing. And, you know, what's been really nice is seeing the growth that she's gone through in the past few years, because she is just truly going to be a sensation. It's annoying that Footloose couldn't go out when it did, because it was just at that point where I'm like, this is when she's going to blow up. And now she's blowing up for different reasons, and I'm like, I want her to blow up on my show, you know. But I think, you know, that's one of those examples of just how we get to invest in early career and really bring someone along. And I whenever Evie releases something on Twitter or Instagram, I'm one of the first people to comment going, you're amazing.
But that must be a really cool, rewarding part of your job, when you're literally seeing people from drama school get into, you know, their first few auditions, and then 5 years later they're massive.
It's one of the reasons I love working at places like Above the Stag or even The Barn, because not your seasoned lot will always come and work there, because it's a sometimes out of London, or it's they're doing other things. So with places like Above the Stag and The Barn, you have more of a license to get a younger, fresher cast in and just go, well, this is who I want. And even if it's not a younger cast, then you get some real unearthed gems who have, you know, been waiting for a while, and then suddenly they've got this lead role in a huge show, and people do go and see it. So it's investing in early careers at all stages, if that makes sense. So like with The Barn especially, it's just wonderful to see the people that come in. And we always get a wonderful cast together there, which I really like.
I even feel like The Barn is almost like, I remember when the Balm was announced, you know, was it new? Was it, I think, a relaunch or whatever? And then to see it from, you know, and it was quite a kind of a small, low-key announcement, and to see it now, everybody wants to work there. It's doing amazing productions. The branding, the marketing, everything is incredible.
They are incredible. And I sort of remember the first time I worked with them was on Secret Garden with Dom Shaw directing. And I went into these auditions going, all right, you've given me a cast of 12 actor musicians to go and do a show at a very freshly launched theatre. This is going to be a struggle. But immediately you could see what their ambitions were with the theatre. You could see the artistic director, especially, just how passionate he was about what they wanted to do. And that immediately got me going, I want to be here forever. And, you know, there have been a couple of shows that I haven't done for them, and I'm always, like, jealous that I'm not involved with them, especially during lockdown, because, you know, this is just the way things go. But some of the stuff they've done, so Marry Me a Little, when I saw that cast, I was just like, oh, well, I want to come and play with that one, you know. And then we got Waylon in to do Peter Pan, and he's incredible in it. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I really love doing, and especially with the Barn. I just think they're wonderful.
Well, maybe you've already answered this next question, but what are the jobs that get you most excited, be it any scale, commercial, small? What are the ones when you know, fire lights inside your eyes?
So it's, for me, always, especially the stuff I do is tends to be new musical and or if not, like, revamps of things. And that's what gets me really excited. When I get a director going, I don't want to do it like that, I want to do it like this. And I go, okay, tell me everything you want to do. And then you just go on this wonderful journey with the director and just go, oh, well, actually, this is a completely different cast. So again, on I'll use Secret Garden as the example, just sort of talking to Dom and just going, well, this is a cast of people that we've worked with a number of times, but actually not in this kind of world. And it's wonderful to see when it comes to life, you're like, oh, this is exactly the stuff that I love doing. And, you know, the first one I suppose I'm properly known for was American Idiot. I grew up on Green Day. So when they said, do you want to come in and cast this? I didn't think there was ever a question. I just went, yes, I want. Can I be in it as well? I've just quit acting. Can I be in it? No, I can't. Okay, fine. But, you know, I sort of talking to Racky about American Idiot, and we got a top-notch casting. And on every single production of it, every person in each track, I'm like, yes, because it's a different cast. You know, they're rock and roll and punky, and it's wonderful to see. And there was supposed to be a show at the Vault. I won't name it because it never happened, and it was very sad. But we cast it, and it was this punk rock musical, and I was like, oh, okay, this is different. And it was I won't name anyone involved, but it didn't happen. But it was truly incredible, because just the cast we put together on it, I was like, oh my god, these are people that you know, aren't known for doing punk shows, because they're not seen in that world. And, you know, you had Emma on here talking about how she's, you know, she's known as the jazz person. I'm always a bit like, yeah, but where I love putting people like that is in different shows, going, well, let's see what else you can do. And, you know, one of my friends, Joe Woodward, is one of my favorite performers, just because every time I see her, it's different, and I just go, oh, this is wonderful, because you're so versatile. I get to, like, if there is a legit show, I know you can do it. And then, you know, she did Beautiful, and she was in that, and she was beautiful in that, you know, like. And then she comes in for stuff like Me, where it's a kind of grungy, and we were doing a workshop, and she came in, and everything, I was just like, yes, take you from one thing to the other, because I just adore you.
And how do you, so I know we've got lots of stuff as we're talking about, but this is so fascinating. How do you, so if a new project comes in, a brand new show, new music, it's not, you can't go listen to cast albums, you can't go and watch videos on YouTube, find a sneaky bootleg. How do you get to know it? How do you know what's required of your cast?
I suppose, like, with especially brand new stuff, is when you talk to the director or the musical supervisor. I was just doing, we just did a workshop of Studio 54. And on that, there wasn't much. I knew the world of it, and I knew the songs they were going to be doing. And I was just talking to the team, and they were going, these are the kind of people we want in it. And I said, oh, okay, that gives me a real flavour of what they're expecting. Then I get to come to them with 20 options and go, this is exactly the world, this is exactly the people you want, these are the world you want to live in. But when it comes to music especially, is that I had quite a musical upbringing. I was in a band because I was well cool.
You look like you could be in a band.
I was in an indie boy band. No, I like to think I'm much cooler than I am. But cool. I did that. So I, like, when it comes to shows like that, where it is kind of a, it, you know, that was, oh, I'm going to say 70s, 80s vibe. I get the producer calling me after this game. You got it wrong. I was like, okay. But, you know, like, that, where I get to know the music. And we had Sharon Rose in it. And that voice, you just go, well, because she's so different vocally. You just go, well, I want you to come and bring something new to the world. And with new stuff, you'll find more often than not, they want to bring something new to the sound. And that for me, is quite exciting. Because you do get to people like Sharon, and we had Landy in it as well, and like, those voices, that. You just go, oh, yeah, I can't really go wrong with that, you know. So yeah, that's what I do.
Oh my gosh! Right, we're gonna talk lots more. We have lots we need to discuss. So you ready for a bit of a stagey catch up?
I can't wait. I can't wait to like pretend I'm really stagey, and I'm like, yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. So coming up on today's episode, we are going to be discussing Cinderella, the socially distanced ball, and Jodie Jacobs Live, as well as all the latest news about the Phantom of the Opera and Sunset Boulevard. Plus, I'll be chatting to the team behind this year's Panto at the Arts Theatre Hounslow. So first up, we're going to discuss this week's theatre news. Are you, this could be a dangerous question, are you a fan, a Phantom fan?
So I'm gonna say something that people will be very angry about. I've never seen Phantom.
Harry.
And I don't know where to go from that, because I've always wanted to. It's just, you know, you always have that one show that you've never just gotten around to seeing. And it's a crime that I haven't seen it, because it's been there for, I think, a while, you know, and it's coming back in this, it's a new revamped sort of new staging of this wonderful...
It's a brand new physical production of the original design in the newly refurbished Her Majesty's Theatre.
Yeah, I simplified that with, like, it's revamped. But yeah, you know, like, that again will probably mean I will go and see it, because it is new, so I'll get to experience it for the first time with everyone else. And I always felt like, I've seen Les Mis about 28 times. So with that, I'm going, well, one of those times I could have seen Phantom and known what everyone was talking about. But, you know, I saw Love Never Dies in town, and it became quickly one of my guilty pleasures.
So on this podcast, we had Scandal, our series, because I think I had Kaz Cronin on, another lovely theatre journalist, and she said she was very much team Raoul. And then a lot of other people are Team Phantom. And honestly, never had so many messages in my life of everybody kicking off. Outrage. People were tearing down the other side. It was all very intense.
Just because we're sitting in the dungeon, I'm going to say I'm Team Phantom. Because I feel like if I don't, he's going to pop out of one of these cupboards and just grab me
and
take me away.
The Phantom could be here. Last time I recorded here, all those cushions on the ceiling fell down.
It was the
Phantom. Claudia Kariuki's head. It was hysterical. Yeah, so be careful. Anyway, it has been confirmed that the Phantom of the Opera will return to Her Majesty's Theatre, hopefully from the 5th of June next year. That's assuming that the government's audience restrictions are lifted.
Fingers crossed.
And we have found out that Cillian Donnelly will star as the Phantom, reprising his performance from the recent UK tour. Further casting is to be announced. Well, you know, I'm so happy that it's coming back. And there was so much question, is it, isn't it? Andrew said it was, Cameron said it wasn't. It was all a bit up in the air. But I'm happy that it is coming back. It's coming back to Her Majesty's. And I do appreciate that it's been there for so long and they've never had the chance to rework the set. And I'm sure, well, I've been backstage at Her Majesty's and there's lots of stuff going on there. And I'm sure they maybe did need at some point to press pause and to refurbish the theatre and to rework it a little bit.
And it's a stunning bit of casting to come back with. I mean, I'm a big, big Cillian fan. And again, it's because I worked, not with him, but I worked on Kinky on the from the beginning. So when I get to see him doing that, and then you think, Phantom, really? And then you remember, oh, wait, hang on, and Valjean. Yeah, so he's, again, one of those versatile people that can just do it all, really.
Yeah. Talented, it's incredible.
Talented people, eh?
People will be flocking for him.
Yeah.
On the subject of Les Mis, I got tickets to see Les Mis, the All-Star Stage Concert.
Oh, did you?
And I'm going tomorrow. And you know what? I got some return tickets on last week on Friday, I think it was, and I've forgotten what it felt like, you know, the pressure of tickets come up and you get them and then they're in a basket and then you can't remember your password and then you have to reset your password and then you lose the tickets and then you go back and they're still there and you get them in your basket and then you know your password and you go in and you're in the timer and you're getting your card out and you can't remember your security code and all that stuff and I've forgotten what it feels like to have adrenaline like that going through bones and I'll feel extra proud of myself when I sit in my seat tomorrow to watch it.
Because you managed to get the tickets and that's but it is that, I suppose for at least the next year you're going to be constantly feeling that, because actually we've not done it for 9 months, I suppose, overall now, that we've not been able to go and just buy tickets to our favourite shows and go and see them. And there are so many shows now that, because I've done this enforced hiatus, that's a weird term to use, but you know what I mean.
True.
I've done this enforced time out now that I'm going, well, all those shows that I didn't get around to seeing. So criminally, I hadn't seen Six yet, and I hadn't.
Oh, Harry.
And my friends work on it, you know, Pearson cast it, and every time I talk to them, they're like, we've got this person going, and I'm like, this is incredible cast, which must mean this show's amazing. And then I've listened to it recently, and I'm like, this is amazing.
So had you not listened to it until recently?
Well, I'd listened to bits, but not in the sense that I've done sort of listening to shows now where I'm going, oh, I must know everything that's going on. I still don't know anything that's going on, but at least I've listened to Six now. But no, like I wasn't going to see things like that, and I will go and see Phantom now I know it's coming back. But Les Mis is one of those ones that time and time again, every time I go with an agent or something, I go, it's 3 hours at a theatre, and then I sit down for the first minute and I go, God, this is a good show, isn't it? Like, and that's what I'm looking forward to, so going to see things like that as well. But the new stuff is, because actually what's been quite heartwarming, I suppose, in a heartbreaking sense, is that a lot of the shows that have opened recently in the past month or so are brand new. And you know, I went and saw Death Drop the other day at the Garrick, and even though it's not my kind of show, I sat down and I went, oh God, it's nice to see something really new. And what was really interesting is I've again got some friends that worked on it, some of the producers, and the set designer Justin has, you know,
that's incredible.
So Justin designed one of the shows I directed at the Union. He did Imagine This, and then I suddenly saw that he was doing Death Drop, and I just went going, oh my God, this is really lovely, because new people are coming into town and doing great stuff. And you know, the producers on it are just adorable people who are going, look what we're doing in town, and I'm going, you're amazing. So it's great to see things like that. And then of course the big long runners are going to come back and have people like Killian in, so great.
Everything's gonna feel fresh, isn't it? And everyone's gonna be just the vibe in those audiences is just gonna be up a notch.
It's just I have a real hope it's gonna be like a really big, supportive, happy year coming up. And you know, we've still got a few months to go until we're probably gonna lose some of the restrictions, but when it does, you just almost have that sense that in the spring we get to do big huggy kissy press nights. And like the last thing I went to before lockdown was the press night of Come From Away. And
I was there as well.
Well, of course you were. You're everywhere. Every time I turn around, you're there.
Hey.
Do you want to come and do this podcast? Yeah. But you know, I was at the gala for Come From Away, and it was just at that point in March or February maybe, but it was that sort of going, this might be the last time we all see each other in this capacity for a very long time. And what was so amazing is you've got people like Alice Fearn, who just, I'm again a huge fan of. So going to listen to her sing that, you just go, oh God, I can't wait for it to come back. And I think it will probably be one of the first things I go and see again, because it's like a full circle, isn't it? And plus, this year doesn't count. If it happens in March, I'll go and see it in March, and then it's like restarting.
So Come From Away is a pretty healing show. That's a good one to go back to.
I mean, it's a tearjerker, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, but... and then some. Other big kind of exciting news. Well, actually, it's some good news that's come off some sad news. It's about Sunset Boulevard in Leicester. So last week, Leicester was sadly placed into Tier 3, meaning that the Curves production of Sunset Boulevard is unable to go ahead as planned. They were bringing back the production they toured a couple of years ago. They're bringing back Rhea Jones and Danny Mac and lots of great people. However, it has now been announced that the venue are still going to bring the company together to film a concert production of the musical, which is obviously by Mr. Andrew Lloyd Webber. And they've reconfigured the auditorium so Sunset can be staged in the round. Their stalls have been completely cleared so they can accommodate a socially distanced 16-piece orchestra. And it's going to be made available digitally between the 22nd of December and the 9th of January. It's going to be 3 different performance times daily. So imagine you have to book on for a certain date, a certain time, and then watch these amazing musicians and this amazing cast perform this incredible material.
It's what I find so impressive is that is seeing how quickly people are adapting to the situation. And it's not been the most clear year. That's me being very nice about what has been clarity and not.
It's been a joke,
you know. So what's been amazing is to see how quickly, as an industry, everyone has adapted. And it's not been fun to watch, you know, but it's been those moments where you see things like this happening where actually that doesn't mean that those 180,000 people working on that show are going to be out of work. It means that they're just going to be doing it differently. And I find that kind of, again, heartwarming in a heartbreaking fashion, but it's amazing. And especially with somewhere like The Curve, I went to see West Side there not long before this all happened. I don't know if that's true.
I went to see it in January. It was the first show
it was this year.
Yeah, so it was over Christmas into January. Yeah,
so I went to see it there. And what I find so amazing about The Curve is that even with shows that aren't my my normal visits, as I go in, I just go, God, they're an amazing venue. And, you know, the stuff they do there
incredible.
Is... And Nicolai and Chris are just incredible.
Yeah,
so, you know, I'm chuffed for everyone involved.
Well, I knew they'd have something up their sleeve. They're very clever. Very clever people at The Curve, and everything is sort. I just love going and doing a little loop around the venue. I can't wait to go back to our regional theatres.
Well, we work a lot in the regions, and what I find wonderful is actually you go and explore the town first, and you go to the local sandwich shop and get your lunch or your dinner before the show, or your local Pizza Express if you're in a rush. You know, like you go and do things like that. But then actually,
don't take down Pizza Express, Harry. I won't have that on my podcast.
Hey,
my go-to.
I like Pizza Express. I always every time I have the Polo Pesto, I have to say, sorry, can I have the Polo Pesto but with no chicken? Like, you veggie? Do you want anything else? I'm like, no, just it. And then the onions are
Nothing beats the garlic butter with your Romano pizza crust.
We've had Tesco's is wonderful. This is bizarrely turning into not a stage to catch up at all. They've done lots of meal deals on Pizza Express. So we've had lots of Pizza Express through lockdown because we're just buying it all the time.
Wait, sorry, what was your point? So you're walking around regional places.
Yeah, so you walk around the regional places and you realise that actually what the theatre is the centre of these communities.
Yeah.
And I don't think that has been recognised by the higher-ups in the country, and by that I mean the government, not our direct higher-ups, but the government higher-ups. They haven't really recognised how important these places are. And yes, there was a rescue package, but it took too long and lots of places had to go into administration or forced redundancies, and that is just devastating to these places, because if these theatres don't open, it's a loss of economy for not only our friends, but to whole communities. It's devastating.
All the businesses in that local area.
And to Pizza Expresses. So,
and honestly, Pizza Express cannot go under. I've just
you'll be the one keeping it afloat.
Anyway, in other news, fresh from I'm a Celebrity, Shane Ritchie will return to Everybody's Talking About Jamie from the 5th of January. The Bob Marley musical Get Up, Stand Up will now begin previews at the Lyric Theatre on the 28th of May next year. The National Theatre is only going to launch its own streaming service called National Theatre at Home, and it will feature NT Live productions as well as some archive recordings that dug up for us. And Cameron McIntosh is hoping to recommence full-scale West End performances in May 2021. Fingers crossed.
Hurrah.
Right, time for some show talk. And last night, I went to the Turbine Theatre to see Cinderella, the socially distanced ball.
That's the adult panto there, isn't it?
I don't know if I've been to an adult panto before, or I don't know. I feel like I've seen some of like crude ones that go too far. Uh-huh. Or this for me was just bang on the mark. It was also a really stagey panto. Mm-hmm. And it all makes sense when you see that it's written by Jodie Prenger and Neil Hurst. And they have just had an absolute field day. There is a disclaimer on the website saying it's not for the faint-hearted, all those easily offended. I would go further and say it's just not for anyone who is a Tory supporter, because every time...
I have a sneaking suspicion not much theatre will be for that anytime soon.
Every time Buttons comes on, he says, "Hi, gang," and everyone's got to shout out back, "F*** the Tories!" And it was...
Well, at least they're not on the fence, eh? Yeah.
The whole thing, it was really, really well done, and it was very witty. It was just six of them in the cast, so they got away with lots
and
of rule of six.
It's a truly
jokes.
Stunning, truly stunning cast. I mean, you've got Oscar and Scott and Daisy and Rufus as well. Like, it's one of those casts where you look at and go, gosh, I want them in every show.
Disgustingly good.
Yeah, I know.
And it's also kind of the thing that you think, under normal circumstances, you probably would not be able to get the six of them in a room together, because they would all be off doing different
things. That's one of the biggest challenges casting, is that you can always want, you know, Oscar and Scott and Daisy, but they're not free all the time, you know, and rightly so. They're that bloody good that you just go, I want them in every show. But then suddenly Paul has done an incredible job just like getting them all in, and you know, he has been kind of an inspiration for the past 6 months, along with a long list of producers who I won't name all of them because I'll miss someone and I'll get upset and I'll cry. But you know, like, he's done an incredible job putting this cast together, and when you've got that at your disposal, I think it's probably easier, especially with an adult panto, to find the line of what can be considered crass and acceptable in an adult panto. I've cast a couple before, and I really enjoy them. I think that's kind of exactly what I need at the end of the year, is to go and see a panto that's not for kids. As much as I love panto for kids, I'll take my niece, but I won't take my niece who's five to go and see Cinderella, a socially distanced ball. But, you know, I think it's a marvel, and I really want to go and see it. I hope it's not sold out.
I don't believe it is sold out. You can still get tickets. Availability is good. It is £36, which is quite expensive for a fringe venue, but in these times it's tricky, and it is good production value. It's good. They've got a, you know, nice set and a nice design.
Yeah, I think if it's that good, then kind of, especially after this year, I'm like, you charge it and make the money back that we've all lost. Yeah. So I'm all for that, and I will.
And also, so I mean, Jodie was incredible. I mean, the writing was so tight. Jodie and Neil did an amazing job. But it's directed by Lizzie Connolly, and I believe this is her directorial debut. I haven't fact checked that,
brilliant,
but I believe it is. And it was just so, everything was so sharp and so fast paced. And my only complaint is that it was only 80 minutes, and I didn't want to leave. I wanted an act two. I mean,
it was
so
straight
quick.
Through.
Yeah, straight through, great. 80 minutes.
I'm all for one act straight through. If sometimes, like, it's a blessing quite a lot of the time. But I if that means that we've had a directorial debut in and amongst all this, and it's not, you know, as
she is very clever, Lizzie.
As absolutely right it is that lots of these directors work and work. I think new blood in theatre is great.
And Oscar and Scott, they need, this can't be the end of them working together. They were the two ugly sisters, and they were so hysterical. They had a number, they did the Skylar sisters, but it was called, one was called Fanny, the one was called Vijije or something. And then they had, so it was like, I can't sing it, I'm not going to do it, but it was like, and Cinders, and it was just so funny.
The idea that Oscar and Scott haven't done this kind of thing together before is a crime, because they're both that good. Scott did Zeusicle for me as Horton, he is still one of the only auditions that's ever come in front of me, and I've cried at the audition because he was just that good, and he sang Alone in the Universe, and I just sat there and wept. I was like, "Oh, you're really wonderful," and he's such a nice bloke as well, you know. And then Oscar's done all these hilarious videos during lockdown.
I don't know Oscar, he was in Only Fools and Horses, but during lockdown, since he did that Sondheim video of him singing on the tube, he has just gone from strength to strength, and he is now one of the biggest, most sought-after names in the industry.
And you know, I can't wait to see what they do next, and I will be fighting tooth and nail to
Rufus,
make sure they're in my
Debbie,
stuff.
Daisy, yeah, they're all incredible. Oh, I've got Sean. I haven't mentioned Sean. Sean Parkins.
So weirdly, I've known Sean since I was about, I'm going to say six. You know, oh. In that kind of, because I grew up in this industry, loving my sort of I'm a theatre kid kind of world. I've known Sean for a very, very long time, and then even he taught me for a year at college, and then coming out of it, I'm like, hi, I'm a casting director now, you know, like, and it's really nice to do the flip. But yeah, I completely forgot Sean was in it.
He is the fairy god fairy, and
perfect.
It's just
perfect.
Again, sublime. Honestly, the whole thing was just so hysterical.
And you can educate me on this, because I've done one matinee since I've been allowed, so I've not.
Yeah.
Been allowed to drink at the theatre. Are you allowed to do drinks at theatres?
Yes,
is it,
I believe so.
Do you have to have
a
pizza?
I don't know what
it?
The rules are, but at the Hippodrome on Friday, when I went to see Jodie Jacobs, he said you can order drinks inside the theatre venue, but you can't then take them out with you.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know actually what the official word, but I think you can drink in hospitality. People were drinking. Oh, yeah, I drank yesterday. Nope. I forgot.
How much did you drink to forget that?
I had one white wine. Maybe that's why I was laughing so loud. Anyway, Cinderella, the socially distanced ball, runs at the Turbine Theatre until the 23rd of December 2020. Visit turbinetheatre.com for tickets. Honestly, it's 5 stars from me, and I may actually go and see it.
Can
again.
I come with you?
Well, you had to sit in a different bubble.
Oh, yeah, of course. Sorry,
with
bubbles
a different
everyone.
Screen between us, but of course.
What happens if I move in with you for a week? I don't know how it works.
Let's not
anymore.
Get ahead of ourselves. The other show that I saw very quickly was Jodie Jacobs Live at the Hippodrome. I don't really have much to say about this other than Jodie Jacobs is just queen.
She's a global sensation,
queen.
Jodie Jacobs.
I went to her last solo show that she did a few years ago. I think I semi kind of bullied her into doing it when we did an interview back in the day. And I remember her being, she was terrified. She talks a lot about her anxiety, and especially when it comes to performing. And I remember the last one she did, you could tell she was terrified for at least the first half of it. Mm-hmm. This one though, she stepped on that stage and she was so fierce and so at home. And
I mean, I'll never understand why Jodie isn't like the biggest star in the UK, because that voice, every time I listen to her, I go, it's not human what she can do with her voice. And you know, she's done shows for me in the past, and she did one of my favourite ever bits of casting was putting her in Banana Man the musical, right? Like it's one of those shows that when it landed on my desk and I just went, this isn't a musical, is it? And then I listened to it and I was like, this is brilliant. And immediately I thought of Jodie for Crow, and I just was like, this is going to be sensational. And in that I just went, this is wonderful. And she played Paulette for me in Legally Blonde, right? And that's just something that you can never.
Which one was that? Did you do it above the Gatehouse or Kilworth
House?
Yeah, I did. We did both. Oh, I saw both.
Yeah, so Debs did Kilworth, and then I think it was the same year or the year after. Or
do you know, I think it was the same year. I think it was the summer. It was in Kilworth, and I think that Christmas was at upstairs at the Gatehouse.
So same year, and immediately I was, you know, Jodie as Paulette. There's not another bit of casting I'd have wanted to do there. And I remember her coming in to audition, and it was one of those auditions where I sat in and was like, we don't really need to hear you sing, but let's just chat to make sure we're all on the same page. And you know, and it was wonderful. And of course, all the reviews mentioned just how wonderful she was.
She's one of my favourite people to talk to watch perform. She just has the most unique voice. This kind of vibrato belt that she has is unreal.
Yeah.
And she's so clever at picking great material. There's a lot of kind of just a big variety of material in there, but she has such a distinct sound. She's just doing that through song. She can do anything.
But she's also one of the best people.
Yeah.
Like, I on a personal note, I this, to anyone listening, sorry, you don't really care about my personal life, but I'm going to tell you anyway. I went through a breakup that year, like a pretty horrendous breakup, and it was one of those ones that I didn't know was going to affect me in the way it did. And it was at the time that Jodie was at the Gatehouse, and she absolutely took me under her wing and just made sure I was okay. We went out for drinks and stuff with all our friends together, and it was really, and she just really helped me to get me through that, you know, that initial hurdle where it's just constant. Oh, this is the worst. And it was truly awful, but Jodie really got me through that. So I've got, you know, I've got some bias there, but that with the talent, it's just, you can't top it. You really can't.
And if you want to hear an interesting story about erotic yoga, go back and have listened to Jodie's episode of the West End Frame Show.
I'll be doing that.
This show was part of, I should say, it was part of the Fourth Wall Live season at the Hippodrome Casino, which is currently running. So for more info and tickets about all the great people they have coming up over the next few weeks, you can visit fw-live.com.
Nice link.
So, just a quick word about a future show. Once again, in our end of year special, me and my co-host will be answering your questions. If you want to send in a question, email Andrew at westendframe.co.uk or message West End Frame on social media. I cannot wait to see what you send in. I'll be back with Harry in a second, but first, this Christmas, Pantomime will return to the Arts Centre Hounslow with an interactive production of Red Riding Hood. Every show will be streamed, meaning people can enjoy Red Riding Hood in real life or at home. I'm very excited that Jonathan Ashby Rock, co-director and writer, and Philip Ryder, the composer, who are producing the show together, are joining me right now, live from their rehearsal room. Jonathan and Philip, welcome to the West End Frame Show.
Hello. Hello.
Thank you for having us. We're excited.
Thank you for taking time out of rehearsals to be here. I mean, first of all, how does it feel right now to be in a rehearsal room? I can't imagine what it feels
it's
like.
It's really exciting, yeah. There's a really nice buzz in the whole cast and crew. Everyone's just come out of these cocoons and everyone's sort of getting back to doing, you know, non-solo creative work or whatever people have been up to over the year. So yeah, everyone's really excited.
It's like the perfect, I guess, escapism to forget for a little bit what's going on outside, right?
It's back inside a theatre with no natural light, and I have enjoyed over the year working from home in the garden over the summer. That's been lovely. But being back in a theatre, you know, with a creative team, there's nothing like it. Mm.
I guess it's been such a hard year. I guess so many everything's been so up in the air, up and down. Was there moments when you thought this wasn't going to happen? I mean, we only got the kind of the green light that London's in tier two last week. As producers, it's a courageous time to be working on something. There's, I guess, a lot of admiration out there for anybody brave enough to produce something right now, regardless of the scale, regardless of what the project is, because it's just, you have, the climate is ridiculous. Were you desperate for this to happen, or was it up and down, up and down?
Yeah, it's been really touch and go throughout the year. And Philip's kind of a sensible head that goes, no, well, hang on, you know, we don't have to do Panto every year, and we have to, you know, we have to look at it properly and look at the financial risks. And then he's had me chipping on his shoulder being like, when are we doing Panto? We have to do Panto. We can't not do it. We have to do something. We have to do a show. The public need it. but you know, it was really touch and go. I spent the first 6 months of the year writing Peter Pan, which was our plan for this year. We worked 6 years to build up the show to be able to produce Peter Pan and do it really well and have it flying. And we were going to build a pirate ship. The whole thing was going to be based on a pirate ship. The audience were going to sit on the ship. And we had these amazing plans. And we spent the first 6 months of the year working on that, and then kind of just had to press save as and put it in a 2021 folder. But then the pandemic's made us think outside of the box, and we decided, okay, well, let's look at doing Red Riding Hood, because that can be a smaller cast. It's an easier show. We can do a smaller cast. We can try and do it socially distanced. But then that came back and forward. Yes, no, you can't do it. You can do it. You can do it with these things. You can do it without these things. You can have an audience. You can't have an audience. And then we got really lucky, and we put in a few funding bids that came off, and that gave us the opportunity to be able to produce it without having such a huge financial risk, and be able to offer it to people to live stream for pay what you decide, which is something we're really passionate about.
But then something really exciting happened, yeah. Like a phoenix from the ashes. Over the course of the year, we basically, because we had to create a production that had, like the tiered system, different levels in terms of trying to predict where we'd be now and having a project that could adapt and be delivered in any way, basically, was what we tried to come up with. And as a result, we've created this new pantomime that's a multi-platform pantomime or transmedia storytelling piece. And it's completely new, and it's actually something that we've really enjoyed doing, and potentially we will look at doing again in the future in different ways, perhaps not just as a pantomime. It could be delivered in all kinds of ways.
Amazing. So how does it work? So you've got some people there in the audience, and you'll have some people at home streaming it. They could potentially be anywhere in the world. Is it limited to the UK? Is it anywhere in the world?
It's worldwide.
Yeah. We've sold tickets in Philadelphia. Yeah. We've sold tickets in Australia. It's great.
Wow. And is it still, am I right thinking it's still going to be, you're still kind of trying to capture some of the interactive elements of pantomime for the people who are going to be streaming it from home?
So this was the problem, because we didn't know if we'd be able to have any audience. Luckily now we can have a socially distanced audience, but that's still a tiny fraction of the amount of people that can physically attend compared to previous years.
Yeah.
And so we had this challenge that if school kids or patrons were going to be watching, they're going to be watching from a screen. And so pantomime is hugely interactive. Jonathan will tell you more, because he sort of writes it. He does write it. But this year he had the task of writing an interactive pantomime with potentially no audience. And so it wasn't working.
Yeah, we really didn't want it to be naff as well. We didn't want it to be the kids couldn't come and shout out whether they were here or not regardless. And we didn't want to rely on children shouting at their TV screens. And also it just seemed like we had the space to explore and find something further. And it was so important to us for children to be able to, and families, yeah. To be able to interact with the show. And something that we're really passionate about, not just with pantomimes, we're doing children's theatre for years, is that it's not for children, it's for families. It's for grandparents to come with the grandchildren. It's for mums and dads to come with the children or aunts with and introduce children to the theatre. So we wanted to give them that experience still. So now the show is actually just the final hurdle. Before they get to the show, there's a whole list of things that they have to do that we've had to write and create. And
wow.
We've got these maps of arrows that some of us understand and some of us don't. but they do make sense, and they will make sense to audience members.
Incredible. And Philip, you've sort of written the music, right? You've sort of composed it.
you say sort of, because that is actually, that's more accurate right now, because we still didn't have a finale song.
We're getting there. He's had me to deal with, who's been throwing things out. John, I've written this. No, it won't do. It doesn't fit the piece. What does fit the piece? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
I feel like you should have filmed your entire year of you writing this and released it as some sort of Netflix documentary. I think that's what I want to watch. I don't want to be a panto basher or a commercial panto basher, but I love going to smaller regional pantomimes where you do get original music and you get an extra layer of creativity. So I think a lot of the big commercial pantos use obviously lots of pop music, and that's lots of fun and it works really well for them and it's great. But I really love when you go and see a panto, which is almost like essentially an original musical. Do you think that's quite an important element for you and how your show works on stage?
It fits different productions. I started out, one of the first Christmas shows I ever did was for Celador Theatre, and we did A Christmas Carol. And for that, I created a whole original score. It was in a tiny pub in Greenwich. But we started out with that, and then I went from there to kind of Hartford Theatre, which was more commercial sort of poppy songs. And then this year, we've kind of hit a balance, which is nice. And it's sort of, it's an old way of working, which I love. I love working original music.
Finally, do you dare to think ahead to that first show yet? What do you think that's going to feel like? It's going to be, I guess, a bit more sentimental this year, isn't it? It's 10:30 and you're in the wings ready to go on for your first show. It's going to be pretty special.
the 10:30 element's the worrying bit.
I was going to say opening night, and I looked, and I was like, oh, 10:30 a.m.
Yeah, we've got two schools performances, so the schools can watch it live. And it'll be really exciting, but nerve-wracking at the same time. Obviously, most of the audience that we're trying to engage with won't be there. It's a much more farcical show than a normal pantomime. It's very carry on, and it's fast, so I think that we'll just be raring to go, really.
Thank you so much for taking time out today. Red Riding Hood runs from the 15th until the 20th of December, and you can visit the Arts Centre at hounslow.co.uk for info and tickets. Jonathan and Philip, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Have a great Christmas.
I'm back with Harry. Welcome back, Harry.
Hello, thank you.
You said you weren't stagey. Was that true, or are you being modest?
I like to pretend I'm not stagey, but then I'm quite stagey. But in a way that means I don't know that much about musical theatre in the, perhaps the way I should. But no, I don't call myself stagey.
Well, I'm going to ask you a stagey question.
Here we go.
So imagine, obviously, you haven't done too much this year. It's been a tough year. Lots of stuff going on. So if I could give you a time machine, I mean, we could literally be sat inside one right now for we know. We could walk out of this room and it could be the 70s or something. And
I would gosh. Go back, see Paul Nicholas playing Jesus Christ Superstar.
Or like 500 years has just passed. sorry, what's the question? So, yes, imagine I could give you a time machine and you could escape 2020 for an hour, 2 hours and a half, 3 hours, whatever. What show would you go back and see? What would cure your soul a little bit right now?
From any time?
Any time. You can go and see anything. And preferably, sorry, it should be something that you've seen before. So you want to go back and relive something that you've seen when you were growing up, when you were training, any stage.
I'm going to give you the weirdest answer to this. So it would be I'm going to get the year wrong for a start, so that's going to be really good. But like the 1998 version of Peter Pan with Kathy Rigby.
Oh, I don't even know where that
was.
So
it was Broadway, Christmas. She was the Olympian gymnast, and she did that. And it's one of those things at Christmas that I still watch now because it really, like, lifts my mood. And it's quite fun to see the Americans doing Peter Pan because it is a very American take on it. But actually, it's exactly what I need when my mood's, like, hit a bit at Christmas. And, we take that break over December where everyone's off at Panto, so we're not auditioning all that much. But that show, for me, just, like, A, takes me back to being a kid. And I've only ever watched it on the big screen or the little screen or whichever screen. But it's that show is what I would go and see.
Wow, is there a cast album or video footage?
Yeah,
have you ever tried?
It's on YouTube, and I think it's on Spotify.
And how old were you when you saw it?
I think I was probably 6 or 7 when I first saw it.
You're so lucky, seven-year-old in seeing Broadway shows.
Yeah, I did all right.
You're a stagey.
I'm
kid.
A stagey.
You're a stagey person.
And then of course, Come From Away. You know, like anything like that, I'd happily just go and see over and over again, even if it's just me in the audience. I don't need everyone else there. I just need to see the show. Mm. You know, but that's Let's go with Peter Pan.
Okay, that's a good answer. That I like kind of random, unexpected things. We can all learn. Thank you so much for doing this.
It's Thanks
gone
for having me.
Far too quickly.
It has.
I have a present for you. I can't actually touch it and give it to you because of social distancing, but you can grab it. It's this box.
This
here.
Box.
Yeah. See if you can open it.
Try and do it without dropping a mic.
I can't remember if this.
I can't.
I feel like actually yes, this one's so tough that it was supposed to. Gosh. I'm supposed to pre-cut it, but I forgot it. Oh!
Oh my god, it didn't break. Hey, look at that!
What is it?
It's a West End Frame mug.
Yeah.
I will be having a cup of coffee out of this tomorrow morning, and I'm going to take a selfie just for you.
Yes, I cannot wait. Where can people find you on social media, etc.?
All of my @s are the same. They're all @ Harry Blumenau, but then my casting company is HJB Casting as well.
Amazing. And I cannot wait to see you, maybe even hug you at a press night.
Hug me at a press night, and we will have the best time.
I also want to say thank you again to everybody at Wildcard Theatre Company for letting us record at their lovely rehearsal studios in their time machine in Bond Street today. Visit wildcardtheatre.co.uk for more information. Check them out. It's lovely here. And thank you so much for listening to this episode of the West End Frame Show. Make sure you subscribe. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave an Apple Podcast rating and review. You can also check out our interviews podcast, In The Frame, and we always love hearing from you, so follow West End Frame on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. I'll be back next week for another Stagey Catch-Up. Thanks, Harry.
Thanks.